Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking on a really big and I'd say unfinished project in social analysis. We're looking at Rian Eisler's Cultural Transformation Theory, or CTT.
Right, and Eisler gave us this incredibly powerful way to see human societies, framing them on a spectrum between, on one hand, domination, which is all about coercion and control, and on the other, partnership,
which is defined by things like mutuality, care, and distributed agency.
And that work had such profound ethical clarity. It showed how partnership really supports human development and dignity. But, you know, as our sources point out, CTT hasn't quite made the jump into the institutions that need it most.
You mean places like high-level policy, global finance, corporate strategy?
Exactly. Because those institutions, the ones allocating capital and setting the rules, they're driven by very short-term observable performance metrics. They want quick returns, not necessarily, you know, deep ethical alignment.
And that's the exact gap we're hoping to fill in this deep dive.
We need something that goes beyond just the ethics of it. We have to move the argument for partnership from being a moral preference to a structural necessity. And that's where this concept of intrinsic health, or IH, comes in.
Okay, so if the original CTT framework asks, is this system ethical? Intrinsic health is asking something different. It's asking, is this system even viable in the long run, no matter what it looks like today?
Precisely. IH is that missing life-grounded principle. We define it as the underlying prospective capacity of a system to sustain life well over time.
Prospective capacity.
Yes. And what's critical for you to grasp right away is that IH is not about momentary success. It's about what the system is capable of doing next, especially when it gets hit by a shock.
This distinction, it feels like it solves a core paradox. You know, the one that probably bugs you, the listener, every time you see the headlines. How can these huge systems, social economic ruds, that are so obviously causing harm?
Tremendous harm. Inequality, ecological damage.
How can they still look so stable, so prosperous, even powerful for so long?
They look powerful because they are, in effect, converting future capacity into present performance. They're structurally insolvent, but they just haven't hit that collapse threshold yet.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with why just having that domination partnership axis on its own isn't quite enough for a really complex analysis.
Yeah.
It's a great insight. But real systems are, well, they're messy.
The simple diet hits two main limits. First, what we call mixed regimes. Almost every society is a mix. You might find partnership norms in, say, a local food co-op.
Right.
But the larger economic and legal structures surrounding it are just deeply entrenched in domination. You can't just put a label on a whole country. You have to look at the different configurations inside it.
And the second problem, which is maybe the more important one, is what the sources call temporal masking.
Yes. Domination systems can be incredibly efficient at mobilizing resources, you know, through force. And this generates really impressive realized outcomes, huge GDP, military power, rapid infrastructure projects.
Which makes the whole moral critique of domination just look, well, kind of soft or irrelevant.
Exactly. That apparent success is why we have to make this distinction between IH and realized health. Realized health is what you see. It's the output. The current stability, the well-being stats, it's like the speedometer on your car.
But it can be misleading.
Completely. It can absolutely mask deep structural problems. It's like a car that looks pristine on the outside, but you've got a cracked engine block nobody's talking about.
So realized health is the current performance, but intrinsic health is the actual structural integrity report. The underlying capacity.
That is the perfect analogy. And Eisjack explains how a system that seems powerful but is actually extractive is operating. It's converting future capacity into present performance.
Like that company that looks super profitable this quarter.
Right.
Because it skipped all its maintenance, underpaid its staff, and taken out a bunch of unsustainable loans. The quarterly report looks fantastic, but it's on the verge of total insolvency.
And the key mechanism for that is the systematic suppression of bad news. Domination systems are designed to distort or just plain ignore any feedback that reveals their own fragility or the harm they're causing.
Because they value obedience over accuracy.
Exactly. Which leads to this critical state we call deferred fragility. The system enforces a kind of superficial stability, so all the accumulating damage, the environmental costs, the social stress, the decaying infrastructure, it all becomes invisible to the people in charge.
It's like a stress fracture in a bridge. The engineers might know about it, but they're too afraid to report it, and so everyone just keeps driving over it right up until the moment of sudden catastrophic failure.
Deferred fragility is stability until collapse. IH forces us to ask the hard question, what future harm is being created to pay for this present success?
So if intrinsic health is this underlying capacity, how do we actually spot it? I mean, what's its architecture in a society?
We can break it down into three irreducible pillars. These are foundational functions you see in all complex living systems, biological or social, and they have to be integrated.
Okay, so pillar one, energy, or what our sources call social and biophysical metabolism. This sounds like it covers everything from material resources to labor to ecological health.
It does. But health here isn't just about the sheer volume of energy. It's about its allocation, regeneration, and buffering. If a society is just extracting resources without replenishing them, whether that's overfishing the oceans or burning out its essential workers, it's actively undermining its own viability.
And chronic insecurity like poverty. That's a misallocation of energy.
A classic example. If a huge portion of your population is constantly just struggling to survive, their bandwidth is gone. Your society's collective adaptive capacity just narrows to almost nothing.
Okay, so the second pillar is communication. Signal integrity, feedback learning, basically the society's nervous system.
And high IH systems need communication that protects truth under stress. This is a massive vulnerability for domination regimes. They fail here, structurally, because they always privilege loyalty and compliance over accuracy, especially in a crisis.
So when dissent is crushed, the leaders are essentially flying blind. They're cut off from the signals they need to correct course.
They end up fundamentally misinformed. And then finally, you have structure. This is the society's skeletal system, the institutions, the norms, the rules.
The constraints and affordances.
Right. And healthy structures have to balance coordination, you know, the need for rules and stability with flexibility, the ability to adapt. Domination systems, they hard code asymmetry and power into their very structure, which makes real reform almost impossible. Partnership, on the other hand, distributes agency. It builds in mechanisms for change.
Okay, so when those three pillars, energy, communication, and structure, are all working together, IH shows up in four observable ways. These are like the hallmarks of viability.
The first is resilience, the capacity to absorb shocks without the whole system breaking down. A resilient society doesn't just bounce back. It often avoids the crisis in the first place by investing in things like care infrastructure.
Whereas domination relies on this brittle, centralized control that can just shatter under pressure.
Exactly. Then there's plasticity. That's the adaptive capacity. Can the system learn and change its own rules when conditions change?
And domination fails here because it rewards conformity and punishes new ideas, which leads to rigidity.
While partnership thrives on open inquiry and learning, third is performance. But IH reframes this completely.
Right, so performance is only successful if it can fulfill its function without undermining the capacity needed to keep doing it.
Precisely. If you hit record GDP by destroying your water supply and exhausting your workforce, that's not success. That's depletion disguised as performance.
And the last one, which kind of ties them all together, is sustainability, preserving that capacity over time for future generations.
And domination systems are, by their very design, unsustainable. They are engineered to privilege immediate advantage by exporting all their costs, social, ecological, you name it, onto the future.
So the whole illusion of success under domination is created by focusing only on that one narrow metric, performance, while actively ignoring the decline in resilience, plasticity, and sustainability. It looks powerful, but it's just eating itself alive.
It is structurally fragile and consuming its own lifeblood.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Eisler's original work had these four cornerstones of social life that sort of determined if a society leaned toward domination or partnership. This new synthesis reframes them as life orientation operators.
They're the mechanisms that actively encode whether a society is built to serve life or if life is subordinated to serving power. They're the interface between culture and viability. They determine how a society sets up those three pillars we just talked about.
Let's take the first one, family and childhood relations. This is framed as the primary calibration mechanism for a society's baseline orientation. Is it built on threat or trust?
Yes. How a society treats its children sets the whole tone for how power works. In a domination setting, you normalize fear, coercion, rigid obedience from day one. This creates a kind of threat-based coordination, which works for short-term compliance.
But it must create a huge amount of fragility at the population level.
It embeds emotional and social fragility. You're saying the stress from a childhood of fear becomes a critical weakness in the adult social structure. It damages the communication pillar because people become terrified of giving honest feedback.
Exactly. And partnership, conversely, models power as responsibility. It cultivates trust, cooperation, self-efficacy, which are the core ingredients for true resilience and plasticity later on.
Operator two, gender relations. This is defined as the key test of life support valuation. Basically, how much a society values the work of keeping things going.
And this ties directly back to the energy pillar.
Absolutely fundamental. Domination systems systematically devalue care, reproductive, and regenerative labor. The work needed to maintain human and ecological well-being. This work is often feminized and made invisible.
So systems that rely on this unsupported care are structurally consuming their own regenerative base.
Yes, you see it everywhere. Systemic depletion, burnout, declining public health. It makes gender equity not just some ethical nice to have, but a critical piece of health infrastructure. If you're suppressing or undervaluing half your population's capacity, you're just throwing away resilience and flexibility.
It's pure structural inefficiency.
Absolutely. Gender equity is intrinsic health infrastructure. It enhances the diversity and redundancy you need for any robust system.
Okay, operator three, economic relations. The metabolic apparatus. Is it regenerative or extractive?
Domination economics runs on what we call temporal displacement. It's basically running up a massive societal credit card. It inflates present performance metrics like GDP by externalizing its costs onto labor, the environment, and future generations.
So things like pollution or suppressed wages are just future debts. It's framed as a kind of insolvency, a direct violation of the sustainability component of IH.
It is. A partnership economy, by contrast, would treat things like preventative health care, ecological restoration, public education. It would see those as core, non-negotiable investments in intrinsic health. It's an investment mindset, not an extractive one.
And the final operator, number four, narrative and meaning systems. These are the coordination technologies that determine if a society can even see itself clearly. This hits the communication pillar head on.
Domination narratives always prioritize the stability of authority over the accuracy of reality. They enforce one single reassuring story, and that suppresses crucial feedback. It leads to this illusion of coherence.
Where everyone pretends things are fine because they're afraid to say otherwise.
Right, until the external reality breaks through and you get a sudden, completely disproportionate system failure. That's why autocracies can seem totally stable one day and just collapse the next. The system couldn't handle the truth.
Partnership narratives, on the other hand, would treat truth and even uncertainty as a collective resource. They maintain real coherence by integrating multiple viewpoints, allowing for constant small adaptations instead of that brittle stability.
So let's tie this all together. This integrated framework gives us a really clear picture of why societies are organized the way they are, and maybe more importantly, why one of these models is doomed to fail.
We can really summarize it as two opposing dynamics.
Exactly. Domination is a shadow adaptation. It's a short-horizon survival strategy that works for a little while, but by denying complexity and suppressing the feedback that life depends on, it guarantees a structural breakdown. It simply violates the rules of complex living systems.
And partnership is a coherent strategy. It's a long-horizon approach that accepts complexity. It maintains true systemic coherence through constant adaptation, regeneration, and by distributing agency.
It might seem less decisive or slower in the short term, but it is infinitely more durable.
And that feels like the crux of it. This completes the argument. Partnership isn't just a moral ideal anymore. It's a biophysical and systems necessity for civilizational solvency.
We are moving beyond preference. This suggests that cultural transformation is a process of necessary realignment, of bringing our social operators into coherence with the actual requirements of life, not the temporary demands of a power structure.
Which gives anyone in a leadership position a non-ideological, multi-domain framework.
Yeah.
It completely outperforms single-metric governance, like just relying on GDP, because IH can show you exactly when your gains are being paid for by systemic depletion. You can finally see the cost of running up that future credit card.
It allows institutions to see partnership-oriented reforms like investing in environmental cleanup or a robust care economy as pragmatic, necessary responses, not as optional, nice things you can cut when the budget gets tight.
So what does this all mean? Well, our sources suggest that partnership systems, because they're investing so heavily in future capacity, in resilience and learning, in regeneration, they might actually appear slower or less decisive in the short term.
Especially when you're measuring them with those narrow extractive output metrics.
Right. They're spending money on maintenance and putting some away for savings, while the domination system is throwing a huge party on credit. And this points to a really crucial, really vulnerable transition period.
That gap is real. The investment in intrinsic health, it takes time to mature. That can create an initial lag in that visible, realized performance.
So here is the provocative thought for you to carry forward. If short-term extractive competition remains the global standard for what we call success, how can partnership-oriented societies even survive that transition period? How do they build up those intrinsic health advantages that only really pay off over the long haul?
What institutional designs, economic, political, social, do we need to buffer these regenerative systems while they're in that vulnerable stage?
That question, I think, highlights the ultimate design challenge for the 21st century. How to manage the present while actually building a viable future.
We've given you the tools to analyze the system. Now the thinking is up to you. Thank you for diving deep with us.
Until next time.